Hey y'all, this is Hindsight Movie Reviews. I'm Derek. As always, I'm joined by my right hand man, the smartest man in the room, Brandon. And today we are joined by one of my other favorite people in the world, my supersonic co-host, my like literally one of the smartest people I know, period. And that's no hyperbole. Shantae Fabulous from Single Simulcast. Shantae, how are you doing today?
I am doing great. I'm excited to talk about the movie today.
I like how you tried to deflect it back to the movie instead of us talking about you, but guess what, nigga? Tell them something about yourself. Tell them something about your show. Like, tell them something that you've been up to. The floor is yours.
I am, like Rashani said, the co-host of Single Simulcast, where I get to talk shit about a lot of things and a lot of people, but also big up the people that I do like. So hopefully you'll check that out. I also love K-pop. I am studying Korean. And yeah, that's all you need to know right now.
We had a whole thing on the why so serious about K-pop, because I didn't know anything about it. Like, I didn't know what it, I didn't like. Somebody, I forget who was on our show, and they were talking about like some groups, the most famous group in the world. And I'm like, how are the most famous group in the world? I've never heard of them. And they're like, and everybody starts piling on me because I never heard of this group.
Nigga, you're the one who said it. How are they the most famous group in the world if I've never heard of them?
That's nigga. Right.
You did that to yourself.
That's right.
How they can't look. Look, nigga, how is thyme one of the best spices if I don't put it on my chicken, okay?
That's right. I mean, that's correct.
But isn't one of those things, that type of phrase is less about each individual person hearing it and more along the lines that there are individual people in so many places around the world that's why they're famous? It's not about like we all have heard of them, but it's like they got fans here and they have fans.
Well, that's
there
what I end up fans. Saying. Yeah. I end up saying like that's real American to me to say that.
Yeah.
Really American. I shared a tweet last week from somebody. I don't even know who it was. I just saw it and was like, yoink. And so the tweet was, America is the only place I know where people will never get out of their own city and say that we have the best country in the world.
Yeah, I mean, it's accurate. I mean, I think at the same time though, it's just like, you can still appreciate how dope the country looks.
Oh yeah.
In some cases.
It's a pretty country.
But I do think, but it's like, oh, we're the best country in the world. When people say that shit, they're saying it because they think that every other place stinks. And it's just like, yeah, that's not true.
America is akin to the woman on strobe light, honey. Like, yo, you're beautiful when the strobe lights are hitting you. But as soon as the lights come on, yo, I'm sorry, I thought you were someone else. if y'all have not heard that song in a while from the Black Sheep, that is still a classic. And it also brought to the forefront the little quick blurb by me. I did tell somebody that my telephone number was 765-4321, and that the area code was 1-900. And they were like, "Bitch, I've listened to the Black Sheep as well, and I didn't even want your number." So turned out they were coming over to me as a dare, and I played myself twice. By thinking I was better than them and by using the Black Sheep. But I also was that guy who would allegedly use the lyrics of famous bands in my love letters to my girlfriends. I counter with saying that the lyrics weren't famous until I put them in a letter. Brandon.
What?
Nothing. So, Brandon is taking the lead on this episode. Today we are talking about The Distinguished Gentleman, which I would like to point out is one of the best Eddie Murphy movies that I've seen, but it's also one of the first Eddie Murphy movies in this pack that Eddie Murphy didn't write. I'm just saying, I'm just throwing it out there real quick, that it was cohesive as shit and Eddie had nothing to do with it. He was just a character in the movie.
It's also one of the lowest rated Eddie Murphy movies. And I find that to be quite interesting.
I didn't even know about it until y'all said something.
I thought it was rated low because of how much political stuff that they were trying to get in that you had to pay attention to understand as far as like, yeah, as far as like if Eddie was still funny, but there was so much other stuff that they had to get in there to deal with the plot that I think that's why people don't fuck with it. Or it's like a conspiracy that because it was so accurate in some ways, as far as our political system is concerned, that people got to be like, yeah, don't watch this shit.
Yeah, yes. It did feel like a really good comedy version of like The Wire version of politics. Like, you weren't supposed to know this shit, outsiders, that a con man could come into Congress and not be the biggest con man there anymore. And I think that now it's all old nature to us. Like, we're not surprised at the shit that goes on in Congress, but back then that shit was probably scandalous as a mug.
Yeah, it's so good because it has, like, as a political nerd that I am, like, it has all the aspects of Congress, because Congress is made up of actual con men, and then it's made up of people who get there because of their name, which they had a big part of in many ways in this film, with Eddie Murphy's character and like the white guy that was a football player and stuff like that. They get there because of their name. And then there's people that are there for the greed, just to make the money. And then there's also, and people don't like to talk about this sometimes, but there's also people who are in Congress who are really there because they do want to make change. And they do want to like pass laws that help people and things like that. And so you have all these different group types of people thrown into this one body that have to coexist. And so what happens is you get what you see in this movie. You get a bunch of people all doing different things, and then the general public can't tell the difference. And so they just lump it all in together. Like, you're all are all the same. And so somebody actually comes out and proves that they're different, which is what happens at the end of this film. But yeah, this film is about, IMBD did a good job this time. So a con man discovers during a job that U.S. Congress is where the money is. Name recognition gets him elective. But he eventually develops a conscience. That's actually a pretty good description of what happens in this film.
But I mean, also, is it because not enough people saw this movie, so nobody fucked with the synopsis?
Yeah, that's probably true too. So this film stars Eddie Murphy, Cheryl Lee Ralph, and a bunch of people you probably never heard of. Lane Smith, Victor Rowell, I don't know these people, Kevin McCarthy. Oh, Charles Dutton, people know him. But yeah, so this film came out in the early 90s. I think it was 92. Yeah, I think it was 92. And I saw this film in college, actually, because I went back. So I got my bachelor's degree, and then I went back to school, my bachelor's degree in marketing, and I went back to school to get another degree in political science, what they called it, government and public policy. And so I was in a class, and they actually showed this movie. And I'm like, y'all showing an Eddie Murphy movie in college? What are you showing this for? And they showed this film because my professor was like, this is one of a very accurate film that's not taken seriously, but that's actually quite serious. And it's just, and it's done, and they really wanted us to see the film because when you turn everything up on 11, it's really easier to understand the simple concepts behind it, as opposed to when you're down the weeds trying to see it in real life. And so if you do real life things, but you turn it up to 11, it makes those real life things stand out more. And that was his point in showing us this film. So I always liked this film from that perspective. And that was the first time I saw it, was, you know, maybe like 7 or 8 years ago when I went back to college. Go ahead, Ronnie.
You were saying that the cast may be a lot of people that people may not recognize, but I recognized a good number of them and was just like, whoa, they got a really good cast. Because even like, Victor Rivers, who played Armando, who didn't get much to say in this film, he was just one of the group of con people. He was in Blood In, Blood Out. And so I was like, yo, that's Magic Mike. Like, and then Chi McBride from Roll Bounce was in this movie and was skinny, which twice just blew my mind because I didn't know he was ever in a situation where he wasn't the dude that he is now, like bald headed and just solid. So, and then Victoria Roel, like my grandmother watched Young and the Restless like crazy. So that was like, yo, I know her too. But yeah, this movie had a pretty great cast for 92.
Yeah, and Sarah Lee Ralph is like always fine. Like, this is like 30 years ago, she was fine. She, and like 30 years later, she's still fine.
Yeah.
So that was excellent. Shantae, was this your first time seeing it, or have you seen this before?
No, I'm pretty sure I saw this in the 90s, probably not too long after it came out. So I would have been like, you know, 11 or 12 when I saw it, but definitely seen it then and was happy to see it again and was pleasantly surprised at how funny it was. Because I, you know, when you're a kid, you watch stuff and, you know, I was basically trying to like temper my expectations, not necessarily remembering everything about it. But it was like watching it again, it was just like, this is funny. This is like, this is top notch Eddie Murphy. Like, this is what I think a lot of people harken back to, but also knowing that people didn't really fuck with this movie, that this is not the one that people say like, oh, you know, they don't talk about Distinguished Gentlemen the way they talk about Coming to America or Trading Places or any of the movies that he's, any of those early movies, those 80s, 90s movies that he did. They, you know, they just don't. But this is a good movie. This is just, this is Eddie Murphy, you know, being Eddie Murphy, being great, being funny.
What about you, Rashani?
See, this is the first time I've ever seen this movie. I didn't get that college opportunity to watch it, Miss Hawkins. Okay. I didn't grow up where they were gonna be showing this to people for no reason, Miss Hawkins. Seriously though, I'm shocked that I didn't see this because this was in that run of Eddie Murphy movies where he just couldn't do any wrong. Yeah. And so for this movie to have just gone, not just under my radar, but I asked my mom about this movie and she doesn't remember it at all. It's really stunning to me. I just love the we're gonna pull this long con thing, and they're talking about it like it's gonna be difficult, and then they're like, that was fucking easy. Like, getting in here was not difficult at all. And then they just, any con that they were trying to pull just went by the wayside because everything that they did, their regular job was already a con. So they didn't have to put in any more work, and so they just became politicians, which was really interesting to me to watch. I thought it was great. I did. I was shocked at how much I thought it was great. For those of y'all who are listening to this, don't bother looking for this on Vudu. Don't bother looking for it on Amazon Prime Video or any of the other ones because it's not out in digital form. You can only get it on DVD and or you can get it on YouTube. So because I'm like, fuck the system, I'm going to put the link to the YouTube channel that it's on or the YouTube link in the show notes. So then y'all can actually watch this movie because it's something that y'all should actually see.
Yeah, this film, I mean, I read some of the reviews like at the time and stuff preparing for the show. And like, I think people thought the premise was pretty good, but they thought it was kind of slow. And I can see that. I can see how somebody could think this, the pacing of this film was slow to an extent. And then a lot of critics were complaining about some of the shooting of the film, like the camera work and the cinematography. And I definitely get that. But I guess I'm more sympathetic to things in 1992 having those issues. But sometimes I'm not, because then I'll be like, well, they made good movies in the 80s and 70s. So they should have made good movies in 92. But this movie wasn't designed to be that type of film. It was a purpose of this film was to shine, to me, it was like Eddie Murphy being funny and shining a light on something that's real. And at the time, you got to remember, 1992 was going into an election year with Bill Clinton and George H.W. Bush. And those years were very interesting politically in how the world was covering politics. And there were scandals, and H.W. Bush was accused of lying, and Bill Clinton had the stuff in Arkansas, and there was just a lot of things going on that, you know, you had in that, you know, in the 90s, you had a lot of political films. But this film starts off with Eddie Murphy, whose name is Thomas Jefferson Johnson. And he's essentially pulling this con on this congressman that called a phone sex line and thought he was going to meet up with like some type of Latinx woman. And it ends up being Cheryl Lee Ralph who shows up. And Eddie Murphy comes in like he's the cops to arrest them. And he ends up conning the congressman out of like $12,000 in a Rolex, which I actually thought this was a brilliantly thought out con. So starting the movie off strong with a great con. But when you saw this, Rashani, for the first, when you saw the, how this movie kicked off with this opening con, did it give you like hope that this movie was going to be good? Because before we got to this, you had some doubts about this film.
I had hella doubts.
You had some doubts about this film.
Man, I had never heard of this movie before. Why are you pushing these movies on me? I was quite put out. I ain't even gonna front. I'm a dick who has literally pushed a ton of movies on Brandon, but how dare you push this movie on me, good sir? I was quite put out. That first con, it would only have worked on an old white man. Like that's a movie con for your ass. Like, that's not something that would happen in real life where the cop just, I'm undercover and all that, but it played out well for 92. And it did set the scene well as far as who's in their party, who's in their group, who's down for the con and who isn't. And it also set up the desires and mindset of the white dude that they were conning, the businessman that they were conning. So I thought that it was done well. I can't really argue it or say that, you know, I can't make up any jokes about it. I thought that it worked.
Did you think it was a believable con, Shante?
Sure. I mean, I think it played on the idea that here's this white man who sees, you know, a black man in authority kind of thing, and just thinking like, okay, this is fine. This is perfect. Like, just not second guessing it. And also, and even not even necessarily just being a black man and a white man, I think a lot of people, if you as a con artist come across as confident, the other person in their turmoil will go with it because they're already freaked out anyway. They're not, you know, in their right mind enough to second guess anything. They just want to get out of the situation that they're in. They see you saying that they can get them out of this situation, and they just go with it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I like the funniest part was when he's like, when he's like, there's a fourth person. Remember, there's a fourth person.
Yeah.
And the guy's looking like, at that point, that's what I was like, okay, you kind of pulling it too far, because he got to look at her like, how you know it's a fourth person? But he kept falling for it. But at the end of the film, one of these shows, one of the things that we always did, Rashani always asked us, is like, what didn't age well? And I just had to get this out of the beginning. Phone sex, call lines definitely didn't age well. Like, I remember those, but like, I haven't seen it in a movie in a while, but like that was a thing. Like, people would literally call people and pay like $2 a minute to like have some woman like talk sexy to you, and then you in your mind envision what this woman looks like in your head and get off. And in 2020, that's like such a foreign thing. Like, that's just such a thing that just seems like a relic of the past.
But was it replaced by OnlyFans?
Yes. Mm-hmm. But at least OnlyFans, you get to like see the person.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, it progressed into, and you know what? Actually, quiet is kept. There is still sex lines.
Yep. Get out of here.
Yeah, yes. They're still out there.
Sex line in 2020.
No, yes. Like, I follow someone who used to do it. Like, here in the last like few years, she used to do it. And if you Google, I mean, like, I've seen it since like early 2000s, well, not early 2000s, like early 2010s and stuff, that people were still do, like, what is it? Night flirt. That's what it is. It's night flirt. That's a real thing. And you can like do, you know, it's
like, they have video.
I think maybe they do, maybe they don't, but I think I know you definitely it's still like voice instead of video.
Wow.
That I think that is still an option.
You've got to have a particular kink in 2020 to like still phone sex. You know what I mean? Like even if it's like with your significant other, at this point you got Skype, you got Google Hangouts, you got FaceTime, you got Tango, you got WhatsApp, you got like all these things where you can just click the video button and see. But I don't know, maybe that's just me.
I would think maybe that it might be in some cases it might be less about seeing it and more about the connection that you are thinking you're getting between you and this person. You know, that it's like, you know, where you cheat, you can call her, you know, you can call up whoever. She's like, hey, baby, how you been? All that kind of shit that you might not necessarily get with, well, not that you wouldn't get it on video, but that may not be the focus. It may not be about the visual. It may be about you can call somebody up while you're sitting in your office and say like, hey, what's up? You know, and she can talk to you like she your girlfriend, like the girlfriend experience or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So how convincing was Cheryl Lee Ralph at this job?
She was playing Inga, man. Like, not at all. Like, come on, bro. Like, she's not Swedish. And, I mean, one thing that has happened since this movie came out is this great show on Netflix that I am going to recommend to people called Norseman. It's a great comedy. Y'all should really check it out. But they're in Sweden. They're in Norway. And they're talking. And they don't sound nothing like she was trying to sound. Like, that was so stereotypical of what we thought Swedish women sounded like for 92. And when she popped up and said, you thought I was Vinga. You thought I was Inga. But I'm really this. Like, you thought she was Latinx. Like, come on.
I know. I wasn't paying attention.
Like that's how bad. No, that's how bad the accent was. You thought she was Latinx.
Yeah, that's what I thought the accent was.
But no, she was supposed to be Swedish.
Yeah.
I'm Swedish, and my name is Inga.
That was pretty bad. But what happens next is Eddie tries to escape because he basically goes, because, you know, he's an old rich white man. So he, you know, of course he knows the police chief. And so he's like, oh, let me go talk to the chief. And then Eddie dips out. But this is the part that one of the reasons why our professor shows this film. And this is a little small part that really doesn't have any consequences that much to the film. But there, Eddie's like hiding out and he's listening to these two congressmen talk. And it's the one congressman who dies fucking his assistant, which is hilarious. And he's like, oh, I think I'm going to retire. And he was like, I get to keep like a certain percentage of my money. I'm grandfathered in. And that is like, it was an actual rule, like until 1989. That was an actual like law where like you could keep a certain percentage of your campaign money that you could spend on personal expenditures. That you have left over. And so a lot of people, you know, because then that just led to corruption, because then you just fundraise as much as you fucking want, spend what you need, and the rest is yours. And so they ended that shit around, you know, a little bit before this film, but that was actually a real thing. And I think there was I remember reading about this in college. There was like some Democratic congressman in Florida who actually, like, this around this time got caught up in this shit and ended up going to jail. So I think that was a play on that during that time, which I thought was interesting. But they had a lot of that in this film. And so, yeah, then we see the congressman. He dies having sex with his assistant, which is, like, out of ways that, like, for that woman, right, can you think of anything more miserable than having sex with an old white man and then that old white man dies while inside of you? Like, yeah. I can't think of anything. God. Worse.
I could think of something worse for her at that age. Not getting paid, because after she left out at the funeral, the wife was like, yeah, I'm gonna take his stuff, but I can't do you the way that he did you. Like, you're gonna work for me, but I can't do you the way that he did you, or something like that. Like, something snarky that just said that we know that you're his, like y'all were having an affair. And
but she ended up getting a promotion. She ended up working for the chairman.
Mm-hmm.
So it came out on top for her. But I don't know if that's, I mean, I guess that's worth it, maybe. But that just sounds like a terrible time. That just sounds like a terrible, terrible time. It's not like she's fucking Cory Booker. Like, this dude was like Mitch McConnell. Like, I don't know about
I don't even know if, okay, I'm not going to say that. But I will say that it was, it's funny to see, for people who don't know, the congressman who dies on top of his assistant is James Garner, who is the only thing I can think of right now is he's the guy, the old man in The Notebook. So,
I've never seen The Notebook.
Yeah, he so Noah dies on top of his assistant, just to let you know.
Yes. So then he was listening to that, and then he goes back home, and his grandma kind of rings him out for like being a con man or whatever. And then he comes,
which is Granny's job. That is her job to a science.
Yes. And she's like, you even got your cousin being on phone sex lines? Meanwhile, Eddie was being Inga this time on that phone call.
Yeah.
And he was like, more convincing than Cheryl was.
Like, as you sit there and listen to all these people play Inga, that was not a good con, bro. That was a con where they were probably like, that shit worked? That worked? Like, word? Okay. So what do we do next? We don't know. This never actually worked before. Apparently he wants Inga to come to his house and gosh, the stuff that they said that he wanted her to do was quite salacious. But yeah, I was, when you asked that question earlier, like, do you think that should have worked? No, I don't.
So then Eddie comes up with this great idea. He's like, oh, you know, I'll run for Congress. And he's like, well, you got to get on the ballot. You got to get these signatures. And he's like, I can't get these signatures. So he ends up going to this party, this like independent party that kind of already had a ballot spot. And he goes, you know what? That congressman just died. My name is Johnson. My middle name is Jefferson. Why don't I just go by Jeff Johnson? And people will think I'm him. And I saw that and I said, this in a lot of small towns would 100% work. This would 100% work. I was live tweeting this and somebody said this was such a Florida thing. And I was like, yes, that is absolutely a Florida thing in real life. What were you going to say, Shante? Do you think this could actually work in real life?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Just one of the scenes, you know, when it's the actual time to vote and the guy asks whoever he's with, like, who'd we vote for last time? Oh, we voted for, and the person's like, oh, we voted for Johnson. And that's it. And that's nothing. There's nothing else to think about. We voted for Johnson. There's Johnson on the ballot. Not even thinking that it could possibly be someone else.
Mm-hmm.
Like I think it could totally work. I think I think it could work now, depending on depending on the race and whatever, you know, depending on the place, but the shit could happen now.
And even without race, like people don't, I mean, now with the, if you look at the election guide, yeah, they might have a picture of somebody inside of the election guide that shows like, oh, he's black. Never mind. We don't know this. This ain't my nigga. But if there's no picture on it and y'all got the same name, like you said, I don't even have to give it a second thought. Like, yo, I have voted. I'm in Cali. I voted for Dianne Feinstein. Every time I got a chance, not because I particularly liked her, the motherfucker was family legacy. Like, we all voted for Dianne Feinstein, and so when she left, and it was like, okay, who's the next nigga we gonna vote for? Okay, we go to my mom's house and we sit down and we open up that election guide and we go through all of the guidelines they're coming up with and all the uniform clauses and all the stuff that we're voting for this year. And we really go through step by step and look at them all. And then we go through all the people who are running for office. And when it got back to the people that we voted for before, we didn't even talk about it. We're just like, oh yeah, they're a shoo-in. And I think everybody in the area is like, oh yeah, that person's a shoo-in, their legacy.
Yeah, this is definitely not a race thing because it's more likely to happen somewhere where the same result happens over and over. So like you know, there's swing cities and swing towns and swing states in this country, but a lot of places are the same. California in the last 20 years is California. And so if you're a Democrat running, there's a very, very high chance that you're going to win. Right. So if I just, if a Democrat dies and I haven't had the same name and you put me on the ballot as Democrat, you're going to win. Mm-hmm. You're going to win.
Right. When I said race, I was talking about like the type of political race. Yeah.
My bad. Yeah. So like, I thought that was, and it was actually quite brilliant if you're being honest, because, and it was so ratchet because then he goes to his, to the widow's house and he tries to get all the old campaign stuff talking about, I'm going to make a, museum for your, deceased husband. And the widow is trying to fuck Eddie Murphy. In that meeting, which is hilarious because you know he knew he was doing all that shit. So she was getting her own shit. She was fucking the pool boy, she was fucking the butler, like all that type of shit.
And he ain't got no problem with fucking old women, Lady Eloise.
That's exactly what I thought of. They're like, here's Eddie Murphy being propositioned by an older woman again.
Right. That must have happened to him in real life. It had to happen to him in real life, and so for him to put it in these movies.
I feel like he should have turned
the same year.
I feel like he should have turned and looked at the screen and said, "Ah, oh, same old, same old."
Boomerang was 92, Rashani, so it was the same year as this. Something that had to happen for this to be in both movies. I don't think that's a coincidence.
Yeah. It was like, "Hey, can we put it in where an old woman propositioned me?" Don't ask me why. It's just a thing that I do in all of my movies. They all want me.
So he ends up winning, and he takes Cheryl Lee Ralph and who was the black dude that was on his team?
Gravelly voice dude.
Yeah.
And they go to Washington, and they roll up in Washington, and they get in the nigger section of the Capitol. So basically, they... The lady's like, first of all, Della Reese makes it into this movie. Yeah. She's the elevator attendant. And apparently Eddie's boy grabs her ass. And she's like, you grabbing my ass already, Congressman? And he's like, no, I'm not grabbing your old ass. She's like, you don't want to grab? I don't got an ass good enough for you to grab. And I'm like, Della Reese is so great. So clearly they had some good connections from Harlem Nights. And he got her in this film. Although she wasn't credited in this film, which is kind of fucked up.
Oh.
I wish that they had examined that that role further, where her and old buddy who was in on the con, I never really got what his name was because he was just old buddy. But if they had actually taken time out to establish that relationship between the two of them, I think that would have been kind of sweet. I would have liked to have seen that.
Well, here's the thing. I worked at a university in Washington, D.C. that has like a big... like one of their biggest degrees is political science, like politics. And so a lot of my student staff were politics majors and they interned on the Hill, like a lot of them, men and women. Men and women interned on the Hill. And so I would talk to some of my women college staff and they would tell me stories about like, luckily nothing happened to them, but like, their people that they're working with, like the staff members on the stuff or former staff members, they would just hear these things. And things like that is just like what happens in Congress. Like you work on the elevator, you're going to get felt up and it's fucked up. But she kind of like was just like, oh, my ass not good enough. Cause I'm sure it just happened to her so much that it was just like part of the job. Which is sad in a lot of ways, but the scene was funny, so it can kind of be both in this particular sense. But she tells him like, "Oh, the elevator only goes up to the fourth floor. Your office is on the fifth floor." I'm like, "God damn, they got a niggas only section in 1992." He gets up to this office. It's terrible. Like,
it wasn't really a niggas only section. It was because he didn't come to the draft. When they were passing out placement, he didn't come because he didn't have the information because he didn't have a fucking administrative assistant. So he got the bottom of the barrel. That's what happened.
And then the administrative assistant, yeah, right when he goes up there, he's waiting on him. And he's basically like, yeah, I sent you this stuff. You ain't read it. And so he's basically conning him to get a job. So here's the thing. The first time I saw this, I was like, oh, this is going to be a good fit. He got him a nice con white boy to work for him. That's going to be a good fit. I didn't think that the white boy was going to turn on him. But like in 2020, because I forgot that he turned on him, when I first saw him, I was like, oh, he's going to turn on him. But when I first saw this, like when I was in college and I first saw this, I didn't think he was going to turn on him because I thought he found somebody like him there. But did y'all know, did y'all think, oh, this ain't going to be good, this white dude is going to turn on him?
No,
not at first. It's been forever since I had seen it, and I honestly forgot that that was the point where, or that guy was the person that was helping the other guys fuck with Eddie Murphy.
So then we meet Dick Dodge. Dick Dodge is like the
first two rules of dodgeball.
Dick Dodge is the senior congressperson from Florida. He's the chairman of the Powers and what was it called?
Industry.
Powers and Industry Committee. He's basically like Kevin McCarthy in Congress. Like, he's like a dude that's been there forever, got a lot of power. And he basically tells Eddie, like, listen, I just want to know what you're about. And Eddie comes back, well, Thomas Jefferson comes back. He's basically like, I need to get on that committee. And he ends up conning his way on to the Powers and Industry Committee by essentially shaming them with he and his crew called up like members of the Urban League and the local local NAACP chapter, and it's just like, you got any blacks on your committee? Oh, you got any black women on your committee? You got any gays on your committee? You got any Latin people on your committee? And basically shames them, so he knows that he's going to come to him and ask him to be on his committee as like a token personality, because he heard that that committee get the most fundraising money and donations to get rich. Rashani, when you saw this scene, did you find it to be funny and good, that you were like, oh, this shit is too real for me?
Well, first of all, when I first saw this whole part with Dick Dodge and them calling in, acting like the NAACP and all these other offices, the first thing I thought about Dick Dodge was, because again, I just saw this last week, that nigga reminds me of Donald Rumsfeld like a like, if you watch Vice, Dick Dodge is Donald Rumsfeld in a hat. Like, yo, it is so just eerie. I swear that's who he tried to be in this movie, and he did it to a T. Like, just playing the role, playing the field, playing people against each other. He did everything wonderfully. But yeah, the scene with them saying, yeah, we're from this office and this office. Do you have this on your group? Do you have gay people? Do you have this, that, and the third? I thought it was played out perfectly. Like, yo, if we're thinking we got to pull off a long con in order to get into this office, this should be nothing to us. And initially when they got into the office, it seemed like their idea was to con their way into money. And then, like I said, they found out we ain't got to do that shit. We ain't got to fool nobody. They want to give us their money. These people are literally, we're heroes to some of these folks. So how do we take advantage of this?
You know what's funny? We've done all these Eddie Murphy movies, and like, they had a scene in here. We didn't do Bowfinger. They had a scene in here where he's going to Dick Dodge's room late at night for a nightcap. And he's like, oh, we don't know homo shit, are we? And then he's like, no. And he was like, all right, cool. And then he went away. And like, for the time, like I said this throughout this whole month, there's been a lot of opportunities to go really super homophobic in these films that we've watched. And it never went like all the way there, like other films in during that time. It wouldn't be good for today. But looking back on it in hindsight, in 1992, for that just to be a throwaway line, and then for like him to bring like gay people up in his call for like representation on a committee, that was like surprising for me to see in 2024, film in 1992. And so I don't know what Eddie Murphy had to do, you know, if he had something to do with these things. Because remember Rashani in Life, right? You had Miguel Nunez's character in mm-hmm. there. And they never like, you know, they made some jokes and laughed at him, right? But it wasn't like outright just like shaming. He was still part of the crew.
But I mean, like, Eddie has never, even when he's writing it, I don't think Eddie, well, no, wait, never mind. He fucking did Delirious and Raw. Never mind. Yeah. Never mind. Like the, yeah, I'm shocked too. Yeah, I'm shocked too.
But, right. But it's possible that maybe by then he hadn't completely, I thought he eventually apologizes, but I don't know if that was in the 90s for mm-hmm. Raw and Delirious and how he, you know, portrayed homosexual people and everything and using the F word and all that different kind of stuff in his early comedy and everything. But perhaps mm-hmm. at that point he was moving away from it.
Because mm-hmm. using the F word in a black movie in the late 80s, early 90s was not uncommon. It wasn't right. uncommon at all. But we didn't hear the F word in any of these films that we done for Eddie Murphy this month. This month. So I just thought that was interesting from that perspective. So he ends up getting on the Power Industry Committee, and then you get the montage of basically him going through the life of a congressman. So he's getting approached by all these business people. They want to have fundraisers and luncheons and fundraising dinners and meetups. The funniest part to me, and I wanted to hear what you two thought about this, but the funniest part to me was when he meets with the NRA white people and they want to go duck hunting with some semi-automatic weapons. And, and he's just standing there. He's not even shooting. And the white dude's like, you know, they say semi-automatic weapons are just for drug dealers and criminals, but we think the common sportsman should be able to mm-hmm. use them. And they roll up to this lake to go shooting the ducks. And they miss. They're shooting a semi-automatic weapon in the air and miss like 50 ducks flying in the air.
With AR-15s, yes.
Yep.
I thought that was so brilliant about gun control and how ridiculous it is that a sportsman thinks they would need an AR-15. And for that, you could put that scene, you could cut that exact scene and put it in any TV show or movie in 2020 that talks about politics, and it would fit in. It would be funny today. It would fit in, and it would be pertinent to today's discussion about gun laws. And so I thought that was great. But Shantae, was there anything that stood out to you about his that whole montage of him meeting different special interest groups?
Well, it wasn't so much the special interest groups. It was the part where he was supposed to go vote and he sees the field trip kids and everything. And, you know, the lady's like, oh, did you just vote? You know, the teacher, did you vote? What was the vote on? And he doesn't know what the vote is on. But then there's two other dudes who come out and they still are kind of like not quite sure. Like it's a, you know, it's a motion on the rule, on the this, on the that, which I thought that was funny because it wasn't just, you know, because it's easy to think, oh, here's Eddie Murphy and he's unclear what's going on because this isn't even really his job kind of thing. But even these other motherfuckers might not know what's going on either, that they're just kind of pressing buttons, or the shit is just kind of convoluted and who knows, you can't really explain it and everything. But then it was funny when he was basically talking to the kids and basically, you know, saying like, you know, it's gonna be, you know, whatever lunch they want, whatever thing they want, and they was at the end, yay, you know, like, yeah, they're gonna vote for Jeff Johnson when they turn 18.
I want you to have to do less homework so you can get home and watch all your favorite TV shows. That was great. So sometime during this time, we meet Victoria Royal's character, Celia Kirby, who's a pro bono lawyer. So Rashani, what did you think about Miss Kirby and what she wanted? How she didn't give Eddie Murphy any play that first time meeting.
Yo, I like the fact that she closed out by saying, yeah, we also need to discuss sexual harassment by congressmen. You punk bitch. like you're pushing up on me a little bit too hard. Let's talk about what we can do to you. I thought that I think that the role that she played was never How's the best way to put this? In the 90s and now, there is such an ease in denigrating and downplaying Black women in movie roles. They could have made her obnoxious or loud or any other stereotype that was floating around in the early 90s, and it would have been looked at as acceptable. But instead, they made her like a wizard at her job. It made her extremely competent in all forms of office. Like, she was brilliant. And I think that the role that they had her play, I don't know, she was like, yo, you're gonna have to fix this script in order for me to take this role. But I think the role was perfect for Victoria. I think that it played out wonderfully for her. I think she did an excellent job.
What'd you think, Sante?
Yeah, I think she was great. I think, I do wonder, it did seem like for her to be so, I don't fuck with you in the beginning, but then eventually it almost seemed like they were living together. Like, mm-hmm. instead of him going home to his apartment or wherever he lived, it seemed like he was going home to her, you know, whatever, like they had moved in together at, you know, further into the movie. And it seemed like that happened quick, but I mean, it's a movie, shit moves fast, but just, she was very much like, nah, I ain't fucking with you, nigga. And then eventually it's just like, okay, y'all playing house now. Like, okay, that's cool.
I don't fuck with you until now. And go.
You can get all this. I did think one of the lines, and it was very much an Eddie Murphy line where he was like, are all the pro bonets as fine as you? Like, that was funny. And it was very Eddie Murphy. Like, if you told me that wasn't in the script and Eddie Murphy came up with that, I would totally believe it, because that is an Eddie Murphy line.
So then we find out that they end up going, oh, their first date. She's like, can I take you out on a dinner for dinner and or for a date, like so Saturday night or something? She's like, how about Sunday morning? And he's like, oh, brunch? And then they cut to him and they're at church. And I was like, listen, I'm
it
not
wasn't brunch.
Church.
What he was thinking was, we fucking? What do you mean, breakfast? We fucking?
I'm not trying to church shame, but let me tell you something. If my first date was church on a Sunday morning, I would probably be disappointed too. I'm not going to lie.
You better be grateful that she's bringing you before the Lord and her fellowship to meet you, nigga. Plus, if you fall asleep, she's going to just walk out without you. Like that's a real test. If you fall asleep in service, I know that there's been times that I was trying to impress somebody and I couldn't keep my eyes open, and I ended up smelling my own balls during service because I fell asleep with my head between my legs. Like, I didn't even lean my head back when I fell asleep. Somehow, I swear my brother pushed me. This is another little thing of mine. It's a little blurb of mine. I swear my brother pushed me from behind while I was asleep. And so my head went down and I was out. But my head was all the way in my lap. Somebody told me later that they said I was looking for trouser salmon. And I didn't understand that for a long time, but apparently it just meant they thought that my dick smelled like fish. I didn't get that then either. Oh. But with the girl, fell asleep, face forward, fell out, got tapped because my grandma, who's a deaconess in the church, saw me sleeping, head between legs, walked up to me, tapped me, and I knew I was getting my ass whipped on the way home. This was when I was 14 years old, ladies and gentlemen. First girlfriend was a church girlfriend, fell asleep, head between the legs.
So they go to church, and you find out one of the people that was trying to get some legislation passed that he ran into earlier when he first got to Congress was her uncle, who was the pastor of this church, who was played by Charles Dutton, Elijah Hawkins. Mr. Elijah Hawkins. That does sound like a pastor name. Elijah mm-hmm. Hawkins. And so
damn, his name really was Mr. Hawkins.
Was Mr. Hawkins. And so Eddie has to deal with that. And so then comes I guess the turning point of it. It's like the end of the third act. Like, this was the end
wait,
of the
wait, wait.
Act.
Before you get to the third act of this, I do want to say that I didn't like Rock's character initially. I was confused by it initially. because he was treating Eddie Murphy like shit from Jump Street.
Mm-hmm. He was very aggressive.
Yeah, and it seemed like it was because they were the two black guys, but then it turned out that it was because because Eddie was fucking with Dick Dodge, but he didn't know that back then. Not like that. For him to be that much of a dick, it was just like, dude, like that, you ain't doing this right. This ain't how you act to new people.
And so he was there in oh, that's not what I was going to say. I was going to say, so then the turning point in this film happens because Eddie's just riding high, making a bunch of money, doing all the, being his true kind way, kind of shit to everybody, making money, just saying yes to every fundraiser that happens, not saying no to anything. And so then one of his constituents shows up. It's the woman and their son, her son. And I forgot what happened to this. And so when I first saw this, I was like, oh, this is the first Karen in movie history. Because she was.
Right. It was, I think it was her daughter, though. That's, I think she was a girl. She's a little girl.
Yeah, she was a little girl.
It was a little girl.
She's a little, yeah, it was a little girl. But and yeah, definitely like, the first Karen. Yes, because she Karened up. Like the mom was like, woo, she turned it up all the way to like 20.
Out of nowhere.
I am a constituent. Mm-hmm. Do I need to be more than that? I need to speak to our congressman. They physically removing her from the office. Eddie Murphy rolls in, bumps into the little girl, knocks the head off. You find out that it was a wig and that she was actually balding because she had cancer. And so he goes, you know, let me find out what's happening. And so you kind of find out that, like, there's a school and a playground under these giant power lines in his district. And that the theory is that there's a bunch of kids that's catching cancer from that, getting cancer from that. And so Eddie kind of, at this point, he calls in Cecilia, Miss Kirby, Celia Kirby, and is like asking him, like, is this real? Like, this, you know, is this something that's real? And so he develops a little bit of a conscience and he goes to Dick Dodge, and Dick Dodge does the Congress thing, the politics thing. It's like, oh, we'll look into, you know, he has a press conference where he's talking about her and gets her to take pictures, and we're going to look into this thing. And then they meet in closed doors, and he's like, oh, I thought you said you was going to meet, look into this. And he's like, oh, we're going to look into it, but I'm not going to actually do shit. I'm just going to look into it.
Yeah, he said, I think at that part, I think he says, I wrote it down, it was like, sound bites aren't sworn testimony.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And I'm like, that's so perfect.
Yeah.
That is so perfect. Because that's exactly like what happens oftentimes in Congress. And that's exactly what people think of Congress, right? So like, a lot of people don't vote in, a lot of people don't participate because they think that it's all like this. And so I thought this film did a good job of showing that it's like this, but it's also people who do care. And the balance is maybe it's not equal, but it's there. Like there are people who do like try to care. So then they pull this con. This part I was a little bit confused of. I think the doorbell rang or something like this. So maybe one of you two can fill me in on this part. So I looked up and Eddie Murphy was dressed up in like a hazmat suit. What was this con that he was pulling? I know eventually it was the, what happened?
I think in that part, the whole point was to make Dick Dodge and everybody else think that something was going to happen and that he needed, you know, so he's telling people, oh, well, this particular thing is going to have, you know, this testimony or this meeting or something is going to happen. So he goes to the EPA and gets the head EPA dude out. And then he pretends to be the EPA dude when Dick Dodge calls to continue the con, to continue Dick Dodge thinking that this thing is going to happen until it eventually shows up. But he's basically using this ruse to get them to reveal other shit.
Okay. Yeah. So then he's got like the businessman in there and they go into the hearing. And he makes this big ass scene like, oh, why don't we tell the people about what y'all were just talking about? Because y'all just had a meeting And I'm sure y'all want to talk about these power lines and this and everything. So, like, I'm sure, and we just happen to have it on tape. I think the whole world should see this shit. And Dick Dodge is trying to adjourn this fucking meeting. He's trying to get out of there. He calls a recess. They go in the back. The business dude is flipping the fuck out. Just fucking, I gave you money. I gave you this. I gave you that. You turn on me like this. Dick Dodge is like, do you think I'm a moron? Like, you owe me. You think I'm going to turn on you? He's like, no. This dude, I thought he was going to call him a jigaboo because every movie me and Rashani watched with Eddie Murphy this month, there was a line where it was either jig or jigaboo in it. Every single one. So that must be one of Eddie's favorite racial slurs. So I thought that was coming, but it didn't come. And he was like, nobody will see this video as long as you do this. And then they wrestled the video from him, and there's nothing on it. It's like Cheryl Lee Ralph doing phone sex or whatever.
Yeah, the commercial, so like, the phone sex commercial.
He's like, we don't even have shit. And the businessman, this part was a particular too, to like what Shante was talking about earlier, is the businessman was like, well, you already promised you were going to do something. And then Dick Dodge was like, I don't have to do it. Watch this. And I'm like, yo, this shit is so devious. It's so devious. And he comes back out there and he tries to flip the script on Eddie. And says, like, this is just a con man. He's been arrested for this, and this. Mm-hmm. And then Eddie was like, yeah, so? And then he gets up and he's like, yeah, this was me. And then he has to do, basically, he had set the camera up when he took the tape out with another tape to record that whole conversation that was just happening that we just talked about. Mm-hmm. And so they put that on the TV. And it's sideways. Everybody does the lean. Which I thought was kind of funny.
Yeah, that was funny.
And so then the dude even turns the television like sideways, which was quite funny. And then they put it on C-SPAN, whatever, and then everybody across the country is watching it, which I thought was funny because they made it seem like a bunch of people just watch C-SPAN, which, I mean, I guess a bunch of people do watch C-SPAN, but not like that. Like, it was like it's the OJ trial. Like, I mean, the OJ chase where the whole world was watching. But yeah, so then he basically has this change of heart. And do y'all think he became a legitimate congressman after this for like the rest of his career? Do you think, like, that was just a one moment of like consciousness?
Like his road is paved for him at this point in time. Like he said at the end, shit, my game's already been found out here. I'm gonna go ahead and run for president. Like, I'm black. I helped out some white folks. I flushed out, what's it called? I flushed out evil wrongdoers. I don't even know what the word is.
Corruption.
Corruption. Thank you.
Yes.
In office. I did it at risk of my own life. I saved a little girl who has cancer. I saved other people who have cancer. We're going to turn this all around. I'm running for president. He didn't stay in Congress. He got paid while he was there. Yeah. But after that, he was like, I'm still taking this name and I'm going to Congress. Or I'm going to run for presidency.
Yeah.
So we did skip over one part that I forgot about. It was when Elijah Hawkins tells Dick Dodge that he's going to run against him for Speaker of the House.
Yeah.
And so this was the one part that I didn't get in this film. It was like, is there no Democrats or Republicans? Like, it just seemed like everybody was the same.
No, I don't think I do. I was just thinking about that as we've been talking about it, that there really wasn't any party politics, that you didn't know if anyone was a Republican or a Democrat or anything. It was just that here's these guys and that's it. So I don't know. I mean, it almost seems like a good choice, like a good cinematic choice, because I think if you say like, oh, they're Democrats, then people are going to be like, well, they're Democrats, nah, you know. And if you say that they're Republicans, other people will be like, ah, see, they're Democrats, look at those Republicans, you know. But this was more about the collective body, that they could be anybody.
And here's the thing, at that time in 19, like, people today try to make the both sides argument, and it's not that valid in 2020.
Sure.
Not to say that Democrats are perfect, but there's a clear difference between the left and the right in 2020. But in 1992, that line was definitely a lot more blurred. Like, it was more blurred back then. And so the both sides narrative is something that was like if people were, if Twitter was around in 1992 and people were like, you know, I can't vote for Dukakis or Bush because both sides are the same. That's a lot more valid than with Trump. You know what I mean?
Sure. So, sure. Like it, yeah, it told that told, I mean, but I think that, I think the whole thing with them kind of being, with everything being blurred, then people carry that with them now. And that's why it doesn't make any, like it did make, like you said, it did make sense, but it doesn't anymore. But it's like people won't let those previous thoughts go, right, which makes it hard to talk to them. Cause it's just like, yeah, this made sense, you know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, when, yeah, they could all chop it up and, you know, be in the back rooms and talk to each other. And, you know, it's like, it's okay. Well, not that it's okay, but it makes sense that it wasn't as contentious then,
right,
as it is now. But then when you see them also, they're still kind of chopping it up with each other, even though it's as contentious as it is. It's just like, oh, this is gross. Like, how could you hang out with this person and you up here telling me that you care about this, but here's this other person over here who don't care about this, but now you're telling me that y'all went out and got drinks before. That's fucked up. Y'all tripping, you know?
Right. It's the legit con. That's why Eddie Murphy said everything that these people, everything I did is fucked up, but everything these people did was even more fucked up, but it's considered legal.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, at that moment, Elijah Hawkins was like, I'm gonna run against Dick Dodd for Speaker of the House. And this nigga, did he cut his brakes? Is that what happened? He cut his brakes with Cheryl Lee Ralph driving?
No. Oh, no. No, it was an accident. It was a legit accident. And he used that like once Eddie Murphy calls Dick Dodge about what happened, Dick Dodge uses that opportunity to smear Elijah Hawkins.
Yeah, he was like, don't worry about it. I'll take care of this. You go on to bed. Don't tell nobody what happened. And then he fucks over Mr. Hawkins.
Yep.
Yeah, that was real dirty. There's definitely clear baby faces and heels in this, in wrestling terms, Rashani.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, that's pretty much the film. The film wasn't that long. Was there anything else I missed, Rashani, that you wanted to talk about before we get into our superlatives?
I just really like the group that they had outside of Cheryl Lee Ralph and Armando and whatever the other dude's name was. I really wish that they had taken time to flesh him out further, but I know that this movie was really about what goes on in Congress, things of that nature. I just think it would have been a really interesting movie to also look at the relationships that they're having, Chi McBride, to see the relationship that he has with these folks and him popping in and out, things of that nature, but it would have taken away from the whole, so I understand.
Shante, one of the things that we do at the end of these is we have some questions that we ask for each film. So we're going to start with you.
Okay.
So you can do this for 1992. The first thing we always ask is, who's the MVP of this film? Who's the standout performer of this film to you?
Oh, yeah, it's Eddie.
Can I ask y'all a question?
Sure.
Can Eddie Murphy act?
Yes.
Can Eddie? Yes. Yes.
Now, let's not jump into saying yes immediately. He's a great comedian, but he always plays Eddie Murphy. We get on Leon for always playing Leon. Can Eddie Murphy act?
Okay, so then I guess the question becomes, what does it mean to act? I think Eddie Murphy can convey an emotion and make an audience react the way that he wants them to react.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if that's the thing, then yes, Eddie Murphy can act. Because I think of him when Dreamgirls. I think there's a time where you might, depending on where you start with his career, especially if you just focus on the comedy stuff, you might think, oh, you can make motherfuckers laugh, so what? You know, but when you get into some of his dramatic stuff, he can emote, he can make people respond, he can make people sympathize and not feel like, oh, this is some bullshit. I think you really care about the characters that he is playing. And so, yes, he can act.
Okay. Rashani, who was the standout MVP for you?
Oh, by far, it was Eddie. In all facets. Like, this was his movie to either lift or ruin, and he lifted it.
I'm not going to lie. I thought it was Lane Smith, Dick Dodge. Because he was close. I thought that dude played corrupt ass old white man congressman to a that is the stereotypical, like, what you think a corrupt, long term, been in Congress 20 years, 25 years congressman, with how he would act. He's got a bunch of power. He goes home, he drinks his scotch, he's got this elaborate home, he's doing all types of corrupt shit, fundraisers, running shit, behind the scenes politics, conniving, like, all of that. He did all of that so convincingly. It's like, I always say this about Michael Rucker. Like, Michael Rucker plays a racist so good that, like, I think he's racist, even though I hear that he's a great guy.
He's not. Like, he's a racist.
Exactly.
Michael Rucker. Sorry, I thought you said Michael Rapaport. Sorry.
No, Michael Rucker is the dude.
Michael Rucker's the dude who played
Yondu.
He's good people. I thought I said Michael Rapaport.
He's a good dude, but he's played racist in a lot of roles.
Yes.
And he plays them so well that you think this dude has to be a racist in real life. This dude played this man so well that you think this is a sniveling, conniving, corrupt motherfucker in real life. And whenever I can't separate that, like Stringer Bell and The Wire, is when I know you're a good actor or actress, is when I think you're that person in real life. But Eddie was great. Okay, Shante, so you can do this for in 92 and in today. So who do you think could have played Thomas Jefferson Johnson better in 1992, if anybody? And then if they remade the film today, who do you think could play that role?
I actually struggled with this, and it just, like, I couldn't think of anybody for 92. I just didn't think of anybody for 92, but I almost think, and I can't think of this kid's name, but now the sidekick in Roll Bounce, not Bow Wow, but his homie Mouth, I think he's
Brandon.
I can't. Yes.
Brandon T. Jackson.
Yes, there you go. That him could possibly play this role. That was somebody that just popped into my head just now, that maybe he could do something like this.
Okay. Rashani?
I'm still going to say either Jesse T. Usher else the nigga from Superbad. Or not Superbad, but Superfly.
The dude who played Priest?
Yes.
You think he could do a comedy role like this?
He does comedy on Grown-ish.
Grown-ish, yes, he does.
Yeah, so he can pull it off. I think he's funny. And I think he has the looks and be able to pull off playing a con man, because he played a pimp already. Why not?
I think Jamie Foxx would have been great in 2020 in this role.
Sure.
I think he has the acting chops to pull off all the scenes. But he can play such a conceited, like, person really good. So I think Jamie Foxx would have done well. Who do you think could have played Dick Dodge today, Shante?
Dick Dodge. Oh, you know, maybe, like, even though I don't think he would do it, and I don't know, he might not even be able to make it work, but I feel like he's, like, it would be, like, a different kind of Dick Dodge, maybe, like, more a swaggy Dick Dodge. But George Clooney.
Okay.
Yeah, I can see George Clooney.
And he's older now, so he'd be like a statesman. He'd be able to pull that off.
Yeah.
What about you, Rashani?
In this time and in this age, there's only one person I think could play Dick Dodge. Smarmy.
Oh, just, no. Just no. No.
Not to be trusted or believed, no matter what he says.
No.
Yes. No. Only Drake could play Dick Dodge. The way Dick Dodge needs to be played.
No. Drake?
Drake.
He says this every week about any suckerific character. It's Drake. Anybody that's a sucker is Drake. Every movie we do. He wanted Martin Lawrence in life to be Drake. He wanted, what was the dude? He wanted somebody else to be Drake that we just talked about. Oh, he wanted Arsenio Hall, Semi to be Drake. He wanted Semi to be Drake.
And now he Dick
could
Dodge.
He could be Drake. Semi could be Drake. Drake could be Semi. Oh, God.
Drake could be Dick Dodge if he's a younger congressman. Like, if we have Jesse T. Usher, or we have the dude from Superfly playing whatever Eddie Murphy's character's name was, honestly, Jeff. But if we have him playing, then why can't Drake play Dick Dodge?
I need Al Pacino to play Dick Dodge.
That would be dope.
And be way over the top.
That would be amazing.
And
The Devil's Advocate. Or sure. Sin of a Woman. We got to do a Al Pacino month,
yeah,
bro.
We got to do an Al Pacino month. But no, it was, what was that heist movie in the 90s that he was in?
Heat.
That, like, when he was way over the top in Heat. Like that. Like that type of Al Pacino. My favorite actor, I'm not portraying the black race with this, but my favorite actor is Robert De Niro. And I think he could pull this off great because he can do comedy and seriousness, and he can do the comedy. Mm-hmm. But Al Pacino to me just kind of stood out for this role. She didn't have a whole lot of lines, but she was in the film. Back in 92 and in today, who do you think could have played Loretta Hicks, Cheryl Lee Ralph's role, Shantae?
Oh, you know what? Niecy Nash. I say for now.
Yes. Niecy Nash. Yes. 100%. Okay. What about you, Rashani?
I agree.
Yeah, I think that's perfect casting. What about 92, though? Who do you think could have played her in 92 if it wasn't Cheryl Lee Ralph?
Cree Summer.
Who?
Cree Summer.
Who?
Freddie.
That would be different. That would be different. That would be different because one thing about this particular casting and everything is, like, you have, like, granted they have Cheryl Lee Ralph and she is a dark skinned woman and she's funny and they're not really playing on any like black women stereotypes with her, like she's not really snapping her neck and being, you know, whatever or anything. But they did end up giving Eddie Murphy a lighter skin love interest. So if you possibly could switch it, like exactly. If you could have made her, you could have made Eddie Murphy's cousin a lighter skin actress and then give him a dark skin love interest or just have two dark skin women being in the movie. Like that totally could have been something too. You know, so Cree Summer being the cousin. I mean, for one, Cree Summer can do the funny voices because she's a voice actress anyway. So she probably could have pulled off pretending to be Inga, you know, playing a bad Swedish accent and everything, and, you know, being who, you know, playing the role that Cheryl Lee Ralph played. So yeah, I think, I mean, that's a surprising, but it totally makes sense kind of choice.
Do you think Regina King was too young in 92 to play that?
Yeah.
Cause she was born in what? 1971. So she would have been 22.
Yeah. She would have been too young to be somebody's cousin doing that type of role. Eddie Murphy would have been way too old to be her. I don't think that would have worked.
Okay. All right. That works. So yeah, I think that works. That's a good pick, Rashani. Anybody else have a significant role in this film? Oh,
Rock.
Well, yeah, two more. Yeah. So, Victoria Rawell, Miss Kirby, his love interest. Who do you think could have done that, Shantae? Then and now.
Then and now. I'm struggling. I'm trying to think now. Oh, you know what? You know who could? Okay, so now Gabrielle Union.
Yes. Then, well, no.
Yeah. No, not then. Not 92. But definitely now Gabrielle Union. Then, shit. Oh, you know what? Then maybe like.
I got the perfect person.
Lila Rashan or.
Lila's been in all Eddie's Murphy
movies. All of Eddie's
movies. I know
she has
Lila Rashan, you know what? Angela Bassett.
That also would have worked out just fine.
What do you think, Rashani?
If it wasn't going to be Angela Bassett, I honestly, people don't give Whoopi Goldberg enough respect for the 90s, bro. like for 92, Whoopi could have done that role and could have rocked it.
You think they would cast Whoopi as a love interest in 92?
Why not?
That just didn't seem like the type of roles they would do for her back then. I think she could have pulled it off.
But if not Whoopi, then let me see. I see her face. It's the woman who, hold on 1 second. I gotta look at another movie real quick that we just talked about.
Because, so for me,
yeah.
While Rashani's looking that up, for me it's Jasmine Guy.
Oh, sure.
Tanya Pinkins.
Who did she play? What movie was she in?
She played Kyle's mom in Above the Rim.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh, okay, I know what you're talking about. Okay, yeah.
That would have worked. Yep.
And she was doing soap operas back then. So yeah.
Yep. AJ Johnson too could have played that role.
Sure.
But I think Jasmine Guy would have been great at that role, just playing like a lawyer, really smart lawyer type person. I thought Jasmine Guy would have been great. And then last major role really is Rock. Charles Dutton played Elijah Hawkins. Shante, who do you think could have done that better than in today?
Elijah. Okay. Damn. I'm blanking. You guys go ahead and I'll see if I can come up with another actor because I'm blanking.
Rashani?
No, she's right. Back then, nobody else played indignant black men quite like Rock did.
So, hold on. So, was Rock a big deal to y'all out in California? Because in Baltimore, it was obviously, he's from Baltimore. It took place in Baltimore. It was a big thing.
We watched it like every week, bro. Like, that's why when we said when his name got said, I was like, whoa. Like, Rock was a real thing for us out here. And, like, that nigga could judge people like nobody's business, even on his own show. Judge the fuck out of his brother, judge the fuck out of his wife. I don't even remember much about Rock. I just remember him judging people. He got on Menace Society in 95 and was judging niggas. So nobody judges people quite like Rock back in the 90s. But in this day and age, who can play Rock? And
I got one.
Go for it.
Back then, Carl Winslow.
Oh, okay, sure.
Carl, I don't even know his real name. What is his real name?
Reginald Bell Johnson.
Yeah, Reginald Bell Johnson. Yeah,
but I can't. I think it's because, and this is again unpopular opinion, I fucking hated Family Matters. I always hated Family Matters. I hated it even more when Urkel became the star of the show, but I hated Family Matters. Like, it was just that whole TGIF block could kiss my ass. The only good thing about Family Matters was, you know what? No, she was too young. No, she wasn't. The wife from Family Matters could have played a role, or Aunt Thelma could have played a role in this movie as well.
Oh, Aunt Thelma, yeah.
Sure. But I just always thought that Family Matters was just too much. Like, and then when Urkel came in, it really became too much. And then when that little girl went upstairs and never came back down, that's when I was like, fuck this show forever.
I think David Harwood could have played that actor today. I mean, played that role today. He's the black dude from Supergirl that plays Martian Manhunter.
I think Winston Duke could have done it.
Winston Duke? Really?
Yeah.
I feel like he's too good for that role.
You're really going by who's too good for roles right now, bro. Yes.
I think he's too good for that role.
But you're not thinking about the fact that it's a movie. Like, yeah, I might be too good for this role, but it's a movie, and I want to be in a movie, so I'm going to do this movie.
That's what you say when you ain't good. When you're good, you be like, I mean, the only person who don't turn down roles is Samuel L. Jackson. He says yes to everything.
Samuel L. Jackson would be good in this role.
See, I think that's who I was getting ready to say. It's like the only person I can, you know, because I'm trying to think of somebody who's going to yell and kind of be indignant at somebody and judgy. And like, it's basically him And also, I think it would be a different toned movie, but like Denzel, I feel like could be indignant and yelling and that very kind of thing that Charles S. Dutton was doing.
Stringer Bell could do it too. He can definitely be indignant and unlikable.
Sure.
100%. I think that was all the big roles in this film. Shante, was there a favorite scene or quote for you in this film?
Favorite? Oh, there were a few. It was just silly shit. But like, there was a part where I think he was clowning the administrative assistant, trying to, maybe he was with Twice and was trying to, because he was like, "Oh, are you wearing a wire?" That's what it was. The part where they were trying to. He was like with Twice and like, "Are you wearing a wire?" And he's like, "He got fire engines on his drawers. This is a good man." You know, you know, and just different things. I think when Eddie Murphy was sitting with the original Jeff Johnson's wife, trying to say where he went to school, and I think he said it was like the Wilson Pickett State Teachers College or something. Like, that was funny.
You know, that whole part really was like, yo, I love the way that your husband, like, he was literally like the bootstraps conversation, and
yeah,
that whole part was lit, like, real talk.
That was funny. And the Della Reese, and that Della Reese scene, you know, that whole thing, like, you know, you don't want to grab my ass, and then how it ends with the old gravelly voice dude was like, "I'll grab it," you know, that was hilarious.
I'll grab that. Eddie Murphy was like, "No, I'm not saying that. I don't want to grab no old ass." She's like, "What? My old ass?" Eddie does that so good, where he does like just a random commentary on stuff, and he does that very well. Rashani, what about you? What were some of your favorite scenes or quotes from this film?
"I'm madder than a Baptist in a brothel, you some bitch." "I tell you, I'm about as crazy as a dog in a hubcap factory."
That was good.
"As somebody from California, I think all y'all niggas talk like this, so that was greatness." Oh, man.
Ooh. That was good. Mine was definitely the scene when I'm shooting them ducks. I just thought that was so funny. All them white people just went out there and missed them damn ducks. That's like, it's such meta commentary that like the people who love guns the most can't actually shoot the guns, and that the guns don't really help you be a sportsman. Like, if you want to go shoot a duck, you're going to get yourself a shotgun and shoot the duck. You don't need an AR-15 to go shoot some ducks if you want to shoot some ducks or some deer or whatever. So like, I just found that to be great in a lot of ways and hilarious in other ways and very meta. And I like the scene at the end of the film when Dick Dodge is getting arrested and Eddie kept trying to pose with him.
Yeah.
For the pictures. And he just had this big ass. He's like, "You want me to smile for the camera, right? You want me to coon it up?" And he's smiling it up with him. I thought that was great as well. I think that's it for our superlatives. Is that right, Rashani, or did I miss any?
What aged well, what didn't age well? We already discussed those things, but
yeah. Is there anything that didn't age particularly well to you, Shante?
There was a part when he was doing he was campaigning, you know, the going through the, I guess maybe it was Chinatown or an Asian part, and he was doing an Asian accent. And it was just like, oh yeah, that's not, that doesn't really fly. That's not going to fly now and everything. So that was definitely something that I thought didn't necessarily age well.
Yeah, he did the Asian accent. Then he went to the Latino part of town and did a Latino accent. Then he went to the Jewish part of town, did a Yiddish. Like, he did all of that. Anything that aged well for you that you were just like, oh, this was good back then and that would still hold up today? Oh, she's on mute. What about you, Rashani?
Probably just the belief that you can actually go into office and make a change. Just that lie and recognizing it's a lie. I think that's aged well. Like, lying to people to get into office and lying about what you're going to do once you get in office. I do respect the fact that he said straight out, you don't need to see me kissing babies or anything because I'm this dude and I'm not going to change. But yeah, yeah, that part, that aged well to me is people lying to get in the office. And then once they get in the office, not doing anything to actually help out their constituents at all. And I'm not talking about Jeff in this situation. I'm talking about the football player, right, and the other white guy who I think was on TV.
He was a weatherman.
He was a weatherman who just kind of fell into Congress after they left their initial jobs and didn't know what the fuck they were doing, but were willing to talk to people like they knew what they were doing. That's undefeated.
100%. Yeah, that aged incredibly well. Like this, the whole political aspect of this film, with the exception of the narrative that both sides are the same, and that's only to a certain extent, like ages very well. But I think in 1992, it was kind of daring to do a film like this. But you know the funny thing about this, and this is the same thing I think about with cops, like, you get these arguments with white people who are always defending cops, and it's like cops are aggressive, thin blue line. But then if you watch any television show that focuses on cops for the last 30 years, all of them show cops to be terrible people. The cops are always corrupt,
yeah,
or they're yes, doing bad shit, or they beat the shit out of people. And there's always like one or two good cops, and then everybody else is bad cops. But then when you ask them to talk about it in real life, they're like, oh, there's one or two bad cops and everybody else is good cops. And it's the same thing with this, in a way where it's just like, if you watch this, you would think people would be like, if you watch politics movies, everyone's portrayed as being corrupt and just there to get over and make money. And that's what we think. But then like a lot of people actually truly believe in their random ass politician as being like somebody who's actually making change, and they continue to vote him in. Lindsey Graham's been in office since 1990 or whatever. Like these congressmen or senators been in office forever, even though nothing ever changes. They make movies about him. People watch the movies about him, and then they go in real life and think that it's different, even though these art imitates life. So I thought that aged really well in this film.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, Rashani, you wrap it up, host.
All right, for sure. So this wraps up Eddie Murphy month. I'm still, you know, slightly put out that we didn't get Bowfinger on here, but hey, you know,
we
all the movies
Bowfinger
that we did.
We can do Steve Martin month.
That would require us to do a Steve Martin month. Like that's a whole month of Steve Martin. Name five Steve Martin movies without Googling it.
What is it? The wedding one?
He wasn't in Blues Brothers.
No, he wasn't in Blues Brothers. You're right.
The wedding, the father of the bride, that's one.
Yeah, father of the bride. House sitter.
Was that the one with Queen Latifah?
No, that's Bringing Down the House, which I would not name. But House Sitter is is Steve Martin. House Sitter is Steve Martin and Goldie Hawn.
Pink Panther.
The Jerk, which I haven't seen, but I'm just naming off Steve Martin movies.
Okay, I've seen The Jerk.
Oh, The Out of Towners. I used to like that movie.
What?
The one with him and John Candy, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's okay. None of these are good enough to. I wouldn't even want to bring this upon anybody. Like, yo, real talk, listeners, y'all just got done listening to The Distinguished Gentleman. If you feel like you deserve a Steve Martin month, if you feel like something in your life has told you that you're only pinning to the Steve Martin month, hit us up on Twitter.
You could make it a Robert Downey Jr. month because he was in both.
Three Amigos.
Okay. Oh, Three Amigos was good. Well, at the time, it's probably terrible now.
Yeah,
another one that I
know. Robert Downey Jr. month. Just throw this in there.
Nigga, he was in Bowfinger for like 5 minutes.
He was in it. You got Bowfinger, you got Tropic Thunder, Iron Man, Zodiac.
I'm not doing who any di- Marvel who direct- movies.
Who directed Bowfinger? Was it Eddie or was it Steve or was it someone else?
I got it right here. It was Frank Oz.
Oh, you Frank could do maybe you could do Frank Oz movies.
Y'all are trying so like a hard director.
Oh, the Muppet movies. I mean,
to get Bowfinger out there for whatever. Me, and I appreciate this. I appreciate. I mean,
The Stepford. So he did the Stepford Wives, Bowfinger.
I've never heard of these movies.
What about Bob? That's a great film. We already have that on one of our lists. I think that's Bill Murray, right?
That's Bill Murray month. Yes.
Yep. The Muppets Take Manhattan.
Because I had to give in so then I could talk about Groundhog's Day.
Yes. Yeah, we could do.
Luckily, next month we don't have to worry about what we're going to do because next month is Halloween. So we are doing Hood Halloween classics next month. So tune in next week when we talk
hold about. Hold on. Before we go, I have to ask Shantae this.
Okay.
Shantae, are you a fan of Vampire in Brooklyn?
Be honest.
I mean, I don't dislike it. It's not like one of those like, oh, fuck that movie. It's just not a movie that I ever wanted to revisit after watching it.
That means she's not a fan, Brandon.
No, that's not what that means.
Nobody's a fan of Vampire in Brooklyn. Like, I don't even
know. No, understand. I think a lot of people, I think people fuck with it, but it's just, it wasn't for me.
Who, Brandon?
People fuck with it.
Brandon, it's you. You're people.
Everyone fucks with Vampire in Brooklyn. I'm gonna do a poll on Twitter. Watch. I'm gonna do a poll.
Okay, good. I think you would find that there are, especially Black people who do fuck with it. Like especially Black people who fuck with horror. That this is probably one of those Black horror movies that they fuck with it because there's so much. There's not enough Black horror out there, like, you know, the whole stereotype where we get killed in a movie, you know, so it's rare that we get to be, you know, the focus of a horror movie. So I feel like if you poll especially Black horror movie people, they would say that they fuck with this movie.
Thank you.
They would say they fuck with Vampire in Brooklyn.
Thank you. Rashad thinks it's one of the worst movies ever made.
Because I'm right.
I mean, it very well might be.
See?
But that still doesn't mean that people don't fuck with it. That's really what it is. I think that there are people who really fuck with that movie.
What I have found is that there are people in this world who fuck with a lot of things and they don't know why they do.
I mean, it does have a 10% on Rotten Tomatoes.
And also the fact that I literally paid money to purchase Vampire in Brooklyn makes me sad beyond all recognition.
So, do you want to give the people a preview, like tell them what we're doing next month? Do you want to?
Yeah, no, it's not a secret. We're going to go ahead and start off with Tales from the Hood because I need a palate cleanser before we go back to Vampire in Brooklyn. And then we're going to do Leprechaun in the Hood. And then we're going to do The People Under the Stairs. And then we're going to do this movie called Dead Heist.
You hear that? This movie, he wants me to watch Dead Heist, but he can't watch Vampire in Brooklyn.
So, wait, Rashani, are you not going to watch Vampire in Brooklyn?
I've already paid for Vampire in Brooklyn. I'm going to watch that shit.
Okay, so basically you two are trading off movies that you may not really fuck with. No,
this isn't an equal trade, Shantae. Do you know who the star of Dead Heist is, Shantae? You want to know who the star of that is?
No, but you can tell me. No.
Big Daddy Kane.
Nigga, what?
And E-40.
And E-40.
Oh, wow.
And Bone Crusher.
Yeah.
Oh, this
is not an even trade.
No,
yeah,
This is not an even trade. This is not an even trade at all.
But you gotta remember, in times like this, Shantae, you can't ever be scared. Eastside, never scared.
Okay, I will say this. Just I hope that I could be considered to be a guest for People Under the Stairs. Just
like scars on it.
Ah.
Scar's the reason why we're even doing that fucking movie.
Damn it. I love that movie. So.
We can have two people on it because I ain't going to have nothing. But the thing is, you know Scar. You're going to be playing Jumping Jacks or Double Dutch to get in on that conversation.
Because
this is Scar's movie. The only thing I know about People Under the Stairs is that it starred the little kid who was the little kid in Moonwalker who played Michael Jackson Jr.
Yeah.
That's all I know about this movie. I'm going to watch it for free. I'm going to make fun of it until Scar erupts.
Bull.
That's the whole goal. How long can I go until Scar breaks? And then I'm going to move forward. But yeah, no, we love to have you. Oh, gosh. Whew. Boy. So, again, from all of us here, Shantae, thank you so much for joining us. We greatly appreciate it. Again, tell folks where they can find you out on Twitter and things of that nature if you want to. If not, then they can just wonder.
No, you can follow me at Shantae Fabulous on Twitter. You can listen to me with Rashani on Single Simulcast. And there you go.
And Brandon, you got any shout outs or anything to say?
No, I'm just thanks, Shantae, for doing this with us. This was a lot of fun. Thank you, Rashani, for watching this movie that I told you was better than you thought.
You know what?
I was right again.
You were right on this one, but don't make a big thing out of it. Your streak is not going to last too long.
And I'm going to be right about we're going to do Vampire Brooklyn. You're going to be like,
you know what? Remember, matter of fact, I'm going to ask my beloved wife, Nisha, to be our guest on Vampire in Brooklyn. That way you can get two niggas who are watching it for the first time. It's going to hate your guts for it.
Perfect. Perfect. Even better. Y'all are going to love it. But yeah, I don't have any other shout outs.
Well, y'all, thank you so much for checking us out. Be sure to look at us on Twitter at Hindsight Reviews, R-E-V-U-E-S. We're also on Facebook. We have a page there at Hindsight Movie Reviews. You can leave an email at hindsightmoviereviews at gmail.com. And that's about it. Thank y'all so much for checking us out. We greatly appreciate it. Y'all be good. Peace. Music for Hindsight is Coffee by Cambo Smith, and it's from the Free Music Archive.
This is Single Simulcast. Don't know by now that you said.